Following a nearly 90-minute press conference by President Trump and his coronavirus response team, we are bringing insight to you about an hour late, but we're going to cover a lot of the extended information in the region. The president said this is an invisible enemy, coronavirus is. He said, I guess it's unknown, but we're getting to know it better. In California, what a difference 150 miles can make. Nevada County in the foothills is reporting its first case of COVID-19. 150 miles to the west, people are under a shelter-in-place order in the Bay Area. So on Insight, we'll talk about both of those situations. I'll also be joined by Cap Radio reporters Scott Rodd and Nicole Nixon over all the action happening at the Capitol. And we'll address the food situation on a day when so many people eat corned beef and cabbage. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight is next. From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak, and we are joining you about an hour later than we usually do due to an extensive press conference by President Trump. And we want to welcome North State Public Radio and its listeners to our broadcast family today. The president is saying very bluntly, we are trying to reduce the number of people that are going to die from this virus. That's what we are trying to do. So how that plays out in communities and states across the country is where our focus will be today, because in California now, gyms and movie theaters have been told to close, along with bars, nightclubs, wineries, and pubs. You probably know that that's an expanded directive that came from Governor Gavin Newsom's office last night. Reno's mayor has ordered all bars, restaurants, except drive-thrus and to-go food options. The nightclubs and gyms closed in that city. That starts this Friday until April 5th. And you might know that in the Bay Area, seven counties have a shelter-in-place order. That's of midnight last night. On the phone with us is Assemblymember David Chu, who represents the eastern side of San Francisco, the 17th district. Assemblymember Chu, thanks for staying on the line and joining us for this conversation.
Of course. Thank you.
Will you talk about this order, why the order to this extent, what does it mean, and why at this moment in time?
We're in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, and so we have to do everything we can to reduce the spread of the virus. We all know from our public health experts that social distancing, everyone sheltering in place in their homes, is the best thing that we can do at this time to flatten the curve, to ensure that we are slowing the spread of the virus. Right now in California, there are over 600 cases of coronavirus that have been reported. About half of those are in the Bay Area. Why? Most of the Bay Area counties have put into place the shelter-in-place policy as of tonight.
So, Assemblymember Chu, there was some conversation with the president about the all-or-nothing idea. Should all states be doing something versus the checkerboard of what works best? I would apply the same question to the Bay Area. Does this sort of become an all-or-nothing, and should the area be widened at this point?
I personally think the area should be widened, because we've all seen from the experience of China, of Italy, of other countries, and how this virus is spreading, that what today appear to be a few cases, tomorrow will be hundreds of cases, the next day will be tens of thousands of cases. So the faster we're all spending time in our homes rather than out and about, potentially spreading the virus to each other, the better. And I suspect that what we have had to put in place as a policy for the area in the last 24 hours is something that will likely be much more widespread in California and throughout the country in the next coming days.
Would you be as specific about the order as you can? Is this an effort to keep people in the counties or to keep other people out of the counties?
It's specifically to keep everyone in their homes. What the policy says is only essential activities, essential businesses, essential government workers are allowed to be out of their home. And effectively what that means is if you need to get food, if you have to go to a doctor because of an illness, you're allowed to move about. If you are a healthcare provider or you're a supermarket, if you're selling food, you're allowed to do your business. If you're a first responder, you're allowed to be out and about. But otherwise, what we're saying is everyone else should be home. At this moment, I am working from my home. I'm actually sitting in my car because I have a three-year-old. I don't want him to bother the radio show, but all of us have to do what we can to ensure that we're not reduced, that we're not spreading the virus.
You might have heard that in an area of France, you have to register for a permit to be out and about. If you don't have the permit, you could be fined. Do you anticipate any reason that this order might go farther? And as I understand, there's not really any specific enforcement piece to it, is there right now?
Well, there's the possibility of enforcement, but look, we are hoping that everyone uses their common sense. The enemy at this time is an invisible virus, and it can be spread incredibly quickly and incredibly easily. And we're asking everyone, use your common sense, stay at home. Stay at home. Stay at home. This is the best way to keep yourself safe, your family safe, as well as for eternity.
That's California Assemblymember David Chu. Thank you, Assemblymember Chu. I know you waited a long time, and considering you're in the car with your three-year-old at home, thanks really for all the accommodation. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for uncovering this incredibly important story.
So again, Assemblymember David Chu represents the 17th District, part of the eastern part of San Francisco. Seven counties in that area are under a shelter in place right now. They include Marin, Contra Costa, San Francisco, Alameda, San Mateo, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz. You heard the Assemblymember say that he thinks the area should be widened, and right now people are being restricted to their homes. I want to shift gears here because in that press conference with President Trump, there was a portion of the presentation by Steve Mnuchin that due to a technical error that was happening nationally, our listeners may not have heard all the details, and that encompassed this discussion of $1,000 checks to some Americans, some of what's happening with the Treasury, as well as the issue of keeping the markets open. I believe we have Sac State Finance Professor Sanjay Varshney on the phone with us again. He is a longtime Sacramento businessman and a go-to person on these issues. Professor Varshney, are you there?
Yep, I'm here, Beth. Good morning.
Again, thank you to you for standing by so much. Can we go over, let's start at the real minutiae of this. For Americans who are in urgent economic crisis, hearing news that there might be a $1,000 check is really like the pot of gold on this St. Patrick's Day at the end of the rainbow. But what is that? What might that mean in reality? Because it is just conversation at this point.
Sure. I think at the bottom of this crisis, besides the medical issue, of course, at hand, is what we call liquidity. We want to make sure that businesses stay solvent. We want to make sure that the workers stay solvent. We want to make sure that people who are employed either full-time, part-time, are not getting disrupted because of having to stay at home or basically being out of a job. And so the question is, how do we make sure that if somebody basically needs cash to stay solvent, whether it's a business or an individual, that we help those people and help those businesses out? So if you look at the policy response, doesn't matter whether you look at the monetary policy response, you look at the fiscal policy response, they are both basically aimed at ensuring that from a liquidity standpoint, our economy does not basically run into an insolvency issue where people are going out of business or businesses are going out of business, not because they truly are not well situated financially. It's just that in the short term, there's not enough cash.
No cash, right.
Yeah. So I think, you know, some of these ideas have been floated before. So, for example, the $1,000 idea to every individual in the United States is not a new concept.
Right.
If you recall, after 9/11, you know, we have floated similar concepts of having prepaid debit cards, for example, given to every American that they could not be used to draw down debt or basically be parked under the mattress. There were, people would be forced to spend that money back on the economy, and there would be an expiration date on you know, how long they could basically keep that cash with them. So I think that same idea is coming back now again, where if, let's say, every individual in the United States was given some short-term cash immediately. So it has to be, I think the trick here is, how quickly can we get this cash into the hands of the people, especially the vulnerable, especially the part-time, especially the gig economy worker who's right now sitting at home because they've been displaced and simply doesn't have the cash in the checking account to go basically spend money to buy the necessities.
Professor Varshney, I'm going to jump in here because the president is saying, or did say in the press conference, that he's hoping for a plan by the end of the day, that it would include designated levels and how to get the money to people. And $1,000 is an unconfirmed amount, but it is roughly the amount we're hearing. And to your point, he's saying, or the discussion was, that a payroll tax holiday would be too slow, that the fastest way might be check or gift card.
I agree. And that has been the debate in the last several days, that while payroll tax cut can certainly help on a certain level, we need immediate help. And so, in fact, a similar concept is being floated right now for the businesses that, hey, can we find a way to have some kind of a business disruption insurance pool where the federal government and along with maybe the private sector, they can pool in some funds. And keep in mind, the policy response and the response even from the private sector has been nothing short of being sensational. I mean, this morning, I'm sure you picked up the news, even Facebook is giving its employees $1,000 apiece just to make sure that anybody who's been disrupted because they have to stay home or because of other conditions that have affected their families, they will basically still stay solvent and will have the cash to at least be able to get through in the short run.
Okay, I'm going to pause you again to add a couple more details here.
Go ahead.
The Treasury Secretary said right now he does believe in keeping the markets open, that the only reason they were closed after 9/11 was a technology issue. So the markets, he said, will stay open right now. There's discussion with the fast food industry so that many, many more companies can have apps to be able to allow you to order ahead of time and your food will be ready for you to pick it up. Grocery stores are doing the same. Dr. Deborah Birx suggested an innovation she'd heard of, which was having a seniors-only shopping time that made it safe for seniors to go into the stores and not, as they're talking a lot about, mixing cohorts of age groups. Would you just say something quickly about this buying of commercial paper, this $1 trillion market, and now this decision, it looks like by the Treasury Secretary, to do a special $10 billion purchase. Can you put that in some everyday terms?
Sure. In everyday terms, what that means is cash right now is short. And we want to make sure that banks, businesses, individuals that need the cash in the short run are able to find that cash. So if you go back and take a look at what the Federal Reserve did on Sunday by bringing down the rates down to zero and then promising to inject $800 billion immediately into the short-term repo market and any other basically market that basically requires that liquidity, that shows that how ready the Federal Reserve is to ensure that any commercial paper, if the problem right now, one of the problems that we're seeing right now is that liquidity might freeze up. What that means is if there's lots of sellers, we may not find a buyer for something. And in that case, what happens is the transaction doesn't happen. So right now, the Federal Reserve, along with the federal government, along with they're combining both the monetary stimulus as well as the fiscal stimulus, both combined together to ensure that liquidity basically does not get squeezed out.
So
we want to make sure
cash,
that, the short-term plumbing is there for both the individual as well as for the businesses. And
right.
So that's in the layman terms what that means there.
Professor Varshney, I so appreciate you being available to us on Last Minute, especially because it is a part of the press conference that many people might not have heard. And it's always good to have you in our corral of experts as we go forward with this. So thanks again for joining us today.
Anytime, Beth.
All right, we'll talk with you again soon. In that same discussion, the Treasury Secretary said domestic travel for now is going to be protected, although the president later said You know, travel between states being limited is another option on the table. As you heard, help to businesses with 500 or fewer employees is being discussed in what would be a stimulus package. So let's put that economic piece of the conversation aside. I do want to get back to what's happening in the local area, and you might have heard us in different promos for today's show discussing that Nevada County in the California foothills has now confirmed its first case of COVID-19. What a difference from the Bay Area, which is in a shelter-in-place mode. But I believe we have Pascal Fussholer joining us. She's the editor of the news source UbaNet, and we'll get a sense of how the community is dealing with this news. Hi, Pascal. Thanks for standing by as we come to everybody a little bit later than usual today.
No problem. Nevada County, we have the first diagnosed positive case that is in the eastern portion of Nevada County, so that would be the Truckee area. Yesterday, Nevada County Public Health released that information and held a press conference to give some details while protecting the patient privacy. So for us here in Nevada County, what we have is we have a 28% of Nevada County's population is 65 and over. So that's a really high percentage. I believe we are the fourth oldest county in California. So there are a lot of changes and a lot of adaptation that is happening. And it's the towns have certainly changed especially over the last 2 weeks, I would say, and the last 2-3 days, you could really tell that life in the foothills is very, very much disrupted.
Pascal, can you say more about details? I think the press announcement included the note that this is a person who had traveled internationally. Is it known how wide the exposure might be or what the person's health status is right now?
The resident and the household are under quarantine. They were not out in the community while ill, and it's an adult that had done some international traveling. And Dr. Cutler, the public health officer, was very clear, saying that the person was incredibly responsible, self-quarantined, and we have a lot of... there was a lot of reassurance, but also... our public health officials were very clear that we have to assume that they are likely undetected cases and act as though there is community transmission occurring in Nevada County. And that's mostly due to the difficult access to tests. So everyone should totally be aware and practice recommended steps. And the self-isolation for the 65 and older, I have definitely seen that a lot of people are following the guidelines, as difficult as they may be.
So what is the testing situation up there, Pascal? Where are people being tested? And I would understand that if someone was severely ill, he or she might be transferred to Sacramento, correct?
Yes, there is that option. And then there are, Nevada County had, last week we got an update that 10 what they call persons of interest or persons under investigation were tested. All 10 came back negative. And then, of course, yesterday our first case. But we do have two hospitals, one on the east side, one on the west side of the county. And there are Quest Laboratories. There is Quest Laboratory in Nevada County. So that is where tests are being done. The access to tests is still... very limited because, of course, there are not that many tests either statewide or even nationwide available. But the capacity is ramping up. And with yesterday, with Governor Newsom's new announcement, there will be more tests. So that is a good thing. Meanwhile, we have seen some shortages in the various grocery stores. Nothing unusual. There is, yes, the run on toilet paper definitely happened in Nevada County. But for now, our grocery stores are open. They are taking measures. There's a lot of cleaning surfaces, et cetera, going on. It's really good. Nevada County, as far as the county administration is doing a lot to keep people informed. They have set up 211, so if you're in Nevada County, you can call 211 if you have questions or need resources. Also, if you don't have a primary health care provider, they can provide guidance there. So there's a good flow of information, which has helped calm the anxiety a little bit. But from talking to people, there is concern about how will I go out grocery shopping? Is it safe?
Yeah, that's such a common question. That's a big question everywhere. I do like that idea of a senior-only shopping time, but short of that, people are wondering how and when to get groceries.
Yeah, and there's also now, of course, social media, with all its flaws, sometimes can be used for good, and there are groups springing up that have a list of, for example, grocery stores where you can order online and can then go and pick up your groceries so that you don't have to go in the store. And one of the stores is that we actually go to. I saw a lot of people just drive up, get their order, and they can drive back home. So there is a certain reassurance, and the community is used to pulling together because we have some experience, be that with floods or wildfires.
Right.
So that is a really good thing. And
right, or helping out, reaching out to your neighbor or a family or friend who might need this assistance. A couple more quick questions, Pascal. I assume all schools in the area are closed now and will be for a few weeks, correct?
All schools are closed, and they were planning on starting distance learning this week. It has been postponed because there are some guidance issues. But all schools are closed. The libraries are closed. But fortunately for the ones with electronic devices, you can still get your books that way.
Right. And in fact, I'll add to that libraries and museums, which had been open for quite a while, even along with movie theaters and gyms, they're all closed now. Is there a food plan happening up there with regard to schools?
The food plan is being worked out as we speak, and we should have very concrete updates on when and where school-age kids can get their meals, and that is definitely in the plan because both vulnerable populations, be that the kids or the seniors, are absolute priorities, both for the schools, the counties, and the cities.
One last question, Pascal. Is there anywhere to get corned beef and cabbage in Nevada City or Grass Valley today? Anywhere where it's being served to go?
I know that several of the grocery stores do have corned beef and cabbage, and it's going to be very intimate gatherings for
right.
St. Patrick's Day.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much again for standing by for us as we come to everybody a little bit later than usual. I appreciate the check-in from Nevada County.
No problem.
You take care. Pascal Fussholer is the co-editor and founder of the news source Ubinet. So we are going to shift back to all the action that happened at the Capitol yesterday. You heard us speak earlier with Assemblymember David Chu, who's working from home, and that's part of the news of all of this. I'm joined in the studio right now by Nicole Nixon, our politics reporter. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
And Scott Rodd, our state government reporter. Hi, Scott.
Morning, Beth.
So it was really a tag-teaming of efforts to keep up with everything happening yesterday. It was almost like the tipping point day, wasn't it, Scott, where everything needed to be dealt with and action did have to resolve some issues.
There was definitely a sense of urgency, behind the bills that were passed yesterday. The governor made clear that he wanted something on his desk, and lawmakers seemed to also all feel the urgency behind this. There was a $500 million appropriation that could go up to $1 billion that was offered to that was passed by the legislature, and it really granted Governor Newsom a lot of latitude on figuring out and determining how to spend that money.
Yeah, he can just decide at $50 million increments that he needs to allocate money in some direction, and he has the freedom to do that. Was that your area, Nicole?
There were some you know, here's some bullet points on things that that money could and probably will be used for: activating hospitals, providing hotel beds for unsheltered people in the state, lots of funding probably for local governments at this time, getting medical equipment and assistance to hospitals and nursing homes, other medical facilities, sanitation and cleaning for schools and childcare facilities, and then funding special strike teams to assist seniors who are at home in isolation at this point, and keep schools operating. Right now, there was a separate bill of $100 million for operating schools and cleaning them. One thing about this bill is it happened very fast, like Scott mentioned. Normally with legislation, there's a constitutional requirement that bills are public for 3 days before they're passed into law. Mm-hmm. And Newsom wrote to both chambers yesterday waiving that requirement. That's allowed in times of emergency. And hours later, the bill passed in both chambers without a single no vote, which was pretty remarkable.
Hmm. A supremely bipartisan effort on this package, correct?
Definitely. Yeah, there was no opposition to it.
You had GOP lawmakers talking about empowering Governor Newsom during this time, which, again, is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, they did make sure, I believe it was, I'm actually going to blank on who it was who said it, but it was a Republican in the Assembly, and I don't want to get it wrong, but he stood up and said, yes, we're going to grant Governor Newsom broad authority here, but also we're really sort of emphasized that we're placing a lot of trust in Newsom, that, you know, we're going to be watching it closely. This is an opportunity for him to, you know, make the decision that he thinks are best, but we will be watching this very closely.
So in the President Trump press conference with his extended team today, he did talk about states needing and being given the latitude, cutting through some of the bureaucratic red tape so that states could do what was particular to them, the difference in California being in one of the top tier states versus West Virginia that still has no cases. And the president said, Governor Newsom has been generous in his words, and I'm being generous to him. What a change in this state in terms of everybody pulling together in a very difficult time when all emphasis is on problem solving.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of the tone between Newsom and Trump, I would say maybe wait 5 minutes and that might change. But in that moment, yes, it was, you know, obviously there were kind words exchanged between both. I think it's very interesting to see how the kind of power centers are starting to form. You know, this is unprecedented times. So the legislature is figuring out what their authority is. The governor is figuring out what his authority is. Local governments are doing the same thing. The federal government is doing the same thing. I think one thing that's interesting that I heard, yesterday in the Assembly and in the Senate, with the passage of this, some lawmakers made sure to express their belief that this allocation of money wasn't just to address the issue, the crisis at hand, but they wanted it to be a payment or some sort of indication of policy making moving forward and improvements moving forward. And so Scott Wiener, in his support for the bill, he said this about what he hopes it will be in terms of what it will mean for the future of public health in California.
This appropriation, in my view, needs to be a down payment, and that is a down payment in California, and I hope across the country, to rebuilding our public health system, to making sure that not just for now, we have to get through this crisis, but in the future, that this never happens again, that we have a health system in this country where we have the capacity to detect and to catch and to take firm action to protect our public early and before it gets to this point, and to make sure that we have enough hospital beds and ventilators and all of the other needs to keep people healthy.
So while lawmakers were very much focused on, you know, how this is going to address the immediate needs of mitigating the coronavirus spread, a number of lawmakers also made sure to sort of look ahead and say, you know, what will this expenditure mean for how we're going to set policy moving forward?
On the federal level, officials today, Dr. Deborah Birx was talking about this needing to be a template for the future, that the flu was in a certain plan in one way, but we're in a different time. And I think that's what the state lawmakers are talking about, certainly there too, is whatever we decide to do here, let it be a template, but let it also be preventative in that way.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what Senator Wiener was alluding to there, and sort of building up the system so that the next time something like this might happen, we're a little more prepared for it as a state and as a country.
Did you happen to catch that Assemblymember Chu was sitting in his car in his driveway because his three-year-old was home and he wanted to be able to stand by to talk to us? Part of why he's doing that is because there has been an unprecedented suspension of this session. Who was tracking that action yesterday?
I'd say more so Nicole.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot happening yesterday. I'll just say that. And things were changing really fast after the appropriation, this emergency spending bill passed. Right after that, the Senate passed rules allowing them to work from home and participate in meetings remotely. That's something we haven't seen before. And sounds like there was a lot of discussion going on behind closed doors about how to make that work. Also,
it seems that it's been in 158 years a session has not ever been suspended. So it is unprecedented.
Yeah.
But then again, so is this pandemic.
Right. And just because they're in recess doesn't mean lawmakers will just be sitting at home. Senate Pro Tem Tony Atkins says they'll probably actually be busier than normal.
In addition to providing our constituents with support, information, and guidance to protect the public health on COVID-19, there is still a crisis in housing, homelessness, potential devastation from wildfires, and sea level rise, still progress that needs to be made on a host of challenges facing our state. We will be prepared on a moment's notice to return to address any urgent action that we must and need to take.
It should be noted that this recess is scheduled until April 13th, but legislative leadership, Atkins or the Assembly Speaker can end it early. They can extend it if they need to. But there was a lot of more moving parts with this, and I know that some things that are still in flux that Scott and I have both been reporting on is what happens with Capitol staff and whether they're supposed to come into the Capitol still or whether they can work from home.
That was something that I've actually been sort of working on for a bit now, and yesterday pretty intensely, because there were a lot of staffers who were wondering, yeah, what does this mean for me? There were some lawmakers who, Senator Scott Wiener in particular, who told his staff to go home yesterday, his district staff, I should say, in San Francisco, to go home and prepare for San Francisco County's order to shelter in place. And so he told them, look, I know that you need to prepare for this. You need to make sure that the needs of you and your family are met. But some staffers that I spoke to, in the Bay Area across multiple offices said, we think this is a good idea, but we're also concerned or confused about, do we have to be using time off? Are we going to be on payroll for this? Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of questions. So, late in the evening, in the evening, a memo went out to lawmaker offices and to chiefs of staff saying, here is the policy and procedure in place to allow staffers to work remotely. And this also is something that is, I'm not sure if it's unprecedented, but it seems very unusual or unique, these circumstances. They have to enter into an agreement to work remotely, and it lays out very clearly what's expected of them, when the effective end date is. And so it's very interesting to see how they're navigating this, not only from the lawmaker side, but also how staffers are trying to work through this as well.
All right. We are coming to everybody at an odd time, and we have an extensive lineup of guests. I'm going to refer people to capradio.org to read more about your coverage from the Capitol. Thank you both for coming in to talk a bit about the highlights. And even though everybody might be working remotely or at home, the news from the Capitol continues. So these conversations will, too. Thank you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Scott Rodd and Nicole Nixon. You can find more coronavirus news at capradio.org. We're going to shift a little bit to more of a food conversation and what's being restricted and what might be available. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio, and welcome to our listeners at North State Public Radio. Glad to have you in the broadcast family. Your clock is correct. It is 10:40 right now because of the extended press conference by President Trump and his coronavirus response team. We are an hour later than usual. There are a handful of California schools still open, but most of them are closed at this point for the next 3 weeks. Gosh, I wonder how your first day of managing this was yesterday and now into today. Natomas Unified School District has been offering to-go meals for students ages 2 to 18. And yesterday, you might have heard the Director of Communications, Deirdre Powell, encourage anyone anywhere in the region whose child needed food to come by with the child, and you'd be handed a to-go meal. So we wondered how day one went and whether the program is shifting or being listened to. Deirdre Powell is back on the phone with us. Hello there. Welcome back to Insight.
Thank you for having me back.
So tell me how this plan went yesterday.
Sure. Well, I was actually out at one of our sites, and I tell you, there were a lot of people. We announced that we would begin serving at 11:30 a.m., and when I arrived at 11:15, there were already families ready to get those meals. So it was busy. We were busy the entire hour. We added our numbers. This is kind of a rough estimate, but we provided about 729 lunches yesterday and 528 breakfast meals. These were all packaged and ready to go because we definitely don't want people congregating. And so it's a pick up and go type of situation. So yeah, people are listening, they're responding, and we served quite a few meals yesterday.
You had some good contributors, and your plan was to do this today through the end of the week and continue doing it. Is that plan still in place? What's your expectation, Deirdre?
Sure. What we have seen, we actually started on Friday because Natomas Unified, we decided to close school Friday and Monday. We made that decision on Thursday, and that was before Friday with the press conferences and the other districts saying, you know what, this is going to be longer than we expected. So we had already announced that to our families. And so what we have seen Friday, I think we had maybe like 50, and you see the difference that happened yesterday. And we anticipate adjusting those numbers as we may even see an increase. So we're prepared to do that. And we're watching our numbers because we definitely want to be able to serve everyone who shows up. We don't want to run out, but we want people to know that, to get there during that hour so that we can do as best as we can. And if we do run out at one location, we have other locations that may not be as busy.
Well, let's say some of those location details right now. And so the meals will be distributed again today from 11:30 to 12:30, correct?
That is correct. And we have 15 sites in the Natomas community where people can pick up meals. Most of them, they're at our schools. We have a few schools that have combined because they're in so close proximity. But they can get the complete list on our website at www.natomasunified.org. We'll do this Monday through Friday, 11:30 to 12:30 p.m., and we will do this all the way through April the 3rd, as we know it as of now. As you know, things change hourly, but that is our plan. During the time that we said we would be closed for schools, we will be providing that to any family that has children 18 and under. Bring the children, and we will make sure that they get meals.
All right, Deirdre, thank you so much. I'm so happy to hear that families were able to take advantage of this generous and continuing plan. Thank you, Deirdre. We'll check in with you again.
Okay, thank you very much.
I was going to add, this is not to say that other school districts might not have their own plan in place, so please check the website for your school, for your district, to find out what's happening with meals, as there is an understanding that such a large percentage of students in California across the state depended on schools for free or reduced meals. Let's add this detail that the Sacramento City Unified School District is mourning the loss of a teacher, an individual who worked as a temporary volunteer and substitute teacher, passed away from complications of COVID-19. We do understand this person was in one of the older, high-risk populations and had some health complications, but this has been a difficult and devastating loss to the community. You can find more about this story, again, on our website, capradio.org. Now let's take a little bit of a turn today to the fact that we are in St. Patrick's Day. This is such an important time for bars and restaurants and nightclubs in the area. But the governor advised that restaurants go to half capacity and that bars, nightclubs, and pubs be closed. He has made this direction. Groups that serve food seem to have an exception. On the phone is Jot Condi right now, president and CEO of the California Restaurant Association. And I thank you for joining us, Jot. I imagine you're getting real good at explaining the distinction here, correct?
I am. And that distinction seems to change daily, hourly.
Right. So here we are on a very important day for anyone in the food industry. What's the current recommendation and what are you advising as the Restaurant Association?
Well, I mean, bars, the initial order from the governor was to close down bars and nightclubs. And so, of course, on St. Patrick's Day, those are the institutions that seem to be full. There's 41,000 bartenders who aren't serving drinks today, for sure. But then when he adjusted his directive, initially he had suggested that restaurants reduce their dining capacity by 50%, but last night he changed that, kind of followed suit LA County and some other regions in California that essentially said restaurants need to shut down their dining operations. So, if you can find a restaurant that delivers, has curbside pickup or a drive-through, frequent them often as you can.
What's this going to mean in the long haul as an association? How do you keep one foot in dealing with the individuals and the other in the broad planning of these highly unusual circumstances?
Yeah, so there's a lot of planning going on right now just to figure out what does this industry look like when we get through this, and we will get through it, but we don't know when. And what you have now are restaurants that are just shutting down, and they're trying to make a decision: can we shut down temporarily, and do we have enough cash flow to pay rent and open back up, or go into hibernation, I guess, or do we just shut down for good? The full service, there's about 100,000 restaurant locations in California, and about 36 to 40,000 of them are full service restaurants, meaning they have dining rooms and service staff, waiters and waitresses. They are essentially closed down. So there's 265,000 servers who are, in the next few days going to be told that there's no work. And how do we handle that is a heavy burden. And obviously there's going to need to be some state action to figure out how to address those workers who are out of work. The hope is that, the restaurants can sort of ramp back up when we get through this, but that will depend on a lot of things, whether, they can negotiate deals with their landlords, because the industry is notoriously thin in terms of profits, 3 to 5%. There's tight cash flows, and they usually operate with considerable debt. So paying a lease and all the bills and not having any customers is a pretty scary prospect for all of them. So I suspect that once we get through this, there is going to be a substantial thinning of the restaurant population in California. And I think that means it's a tragedy for the owners who have sort of put their life savings into these businesses. It's a tragedy for the workers, but it's also, I think a lot of people don't realize that restaurants are the number one generator of sales tax in the state of California. And that's important for, you know, state infrastructure, local infrastructure, schools. And so we're going to need to turn that switch back on, you know, pretty quickly once we get through this. And the hope is that there will be some state action to allow for the restaurant industry to go into hibernation.
So to your point, I very informally called 13 places across the region yesterday, from Woodland to Roseville. And one of the owners I talked to was the Boxing Donkey in Sacramento, which would be a hugely popular Irish pub and restaurant today. And he said, well, we're closed right now until April 1st, but if it's after that, we're going to be out of business. And others had ramped up thinking they could partially be open today, so you know that their kitchens are full of, and probably even prepared meals, the corned beef and cabbage for today. So I know that you'll be looking for the state for some emergency help, and on the federal level too. Any advice to people right now who might themselves be looking for food? Are we going to end up with just fast food options in grocery stores?
No, I don't think so. But I think, you know, the grocery stores, you know, restaurants and grocery stores in California essentially split up the food dollar. About 50% of the food dollar in California has historically been spent in restaurants, and the other half in grocery stores. And we're already seeing, you know, as restaurants, full service restaurants close down, that's putting some strain on the grocery store infrastructure. I'm not sure, based on what I'm reading in the newspapers, that, you know, they're going to be able to withstand, you know, 70% of the food needs for Californians. You have, you know, the traditional quick service restaurants, otherwise known as fast food restaurants, that do about, you know, 60 to 70% of their, you know, meals through drive-thru, and, you know, probably about 10% in takeout. So they're, you know, they're still available. But then you also have, you know, I guess what you call limited service, you know, casual restaurants, like, let's say, like a Chipotle, where you can get your food to go curbside. Those are still options, and hopefully those restaurants will still stay open. And then you have, you know, restaurants that are full service that are closing down their dining rooms and retooling their menus and operations to keep the kitchens going and to institute sort of curbside, you know, contact-free delivery or curbside delivery or pickup, I should say.
Right, right.
So, you know, I suspect there will be some full-service restaurants that can figure out, you know, how to stay open for a while. But again, you know, I'm not sure that that will be sustainable over a long period of time, because, you know, most full-service restaurants aren't like, you know, the quick-service restaurants where you can do high volume and delivery. They're not set up that way. So, you know, maybe if they can do 30-40% pickup or delivery, maybe they'll be able to survive through this.
All right, John. Well, thank you for joining us. I know Fox and Goose in Sacramento is one that was planning with a much smaller number of tables and staff to still have the corned beef and cabbage and maybe a folk singer out there today. But I think everybody's deciding this based on their own needs and safety and how to comply. So we're going to continue this conversation with you at another time. I so appreciate your time today, and good luck to everybody who's trying to just survive this right now.
Thank you.
That is Jot Condi, President and CEO of the California Restaurant Association. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with a few more minutes of insight at an unusual time today because of the president's press conference this morning. But we'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. This is Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. We are again welcoming North State Public Radio and everybody in the listening family to join this wider now broadcast family. So happy to have you with us today. Typically, Insight is on from 9 to 10 a.m. We had an extended press conference at the federal level this morning, so we are in the final minutes of this hour of the show. Television is going to become an entertainment center for many people. Of course, you're listening listening to us on radio, and that's a powerful tool, too. But PBS stations across the country, KVIE being one in Sacramento, offer all kinds of programs that you might never have explored. And there's a new documentary tomorrow night on co-housing. Its filmmaker John DeGraff is joining us on the phone. The documentary titled The Best of Both Worlds, Co-Housing's Promise. Hi, John. Glad to have you with us.
Well, thanks. Good to be back on your show, Beth.
Well, on one sense, you could think housing and homelessness is a bit on the back burner right now. On the other, co-housing may be a more popular choice than ever coming out of the times that we are in and what we're headed for.
Well, I think that's true because it does, in a way, offer the best of both worlds. It offers a sense of community that people live close to each other and can take care of each other, but it also offers the privacy of individual homes or individual apartments, so you can isolate when you need to do that. But you have support when you need support, and that seems really essential in times like this.
Can you give me the definition of co-housing that you approached in the documentary?
Well, co-housing communities are design communities, usually that the people living in them design. They do have private living facilities. Those facilities do have their own kitchens and so forth. But they always have a common house, a large common building, where many things are shared, including recreational equipment, libraries, places for children, and common meals, somewhere between 3 and 5 or maybe 6 times a week. People share a common meal together, and that's a big part of co-housing.
All right, John, we have very little time, but I will say that the documentary debuts on KVIE tomorrow, March 18th at 7 p.m., and then multiple airings, correct?
That's right. And we do have a website, which is cohousingfilm.com, where you can find out more information about the program and also about co-housing.
Okay, thanks a lot, John. Glad you joined us a little bit today.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
All right, we'll post a link to KVIE, and again, it's great programming. One more fun note, a listener, Susan Levitsky, called us yesterday, left me a phone message about being out and about shopping for produce and the way she figured it out to do it safely. So listen to Susan.
Take one of the plastic bags that they offer for produce, turn it inside out, use the inside to pick up your fruit and vegetables, then pull the bag back over it and you have your fruit in the bag.
Isn't that great? The simple genius. A great idea, everybody working together. So thanks for joining us today on this later broadcast of Insight. We'll continue to bring you news as it comes up throughout the day. I'm Beth Ruyak for all of us. Stay safe, take care, and stay informed.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.